Hey,
okay. Get on up. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks. Hello, I'm Megan, alcoholic. Getting all my steps in at this meeting tonight. Vroom, 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 vroom. Okay, well, we're out of time. Sorry. Have a good night. Just kidding. I'm Megan. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is actually February 29th, 2008. And it's an honor to be up here on the stage and get chips with so many of you tonight. So March, that means that if you got a chip tonight, did you do this? Did you think around Thanksgiving, I'm going to get it together. I'm not going to go crazy over the holidays and blow it. And then New Year's came and you went, that's it. I'm making a secret New Year's resolution that I'm not going to drink. And then you blew it. And then what happened for me in 2008 was I grew up Catholic and it was Lent. So I was like, I'm going to give up just one kind of alcohol for Lent and not tell anyone and blow it. And then by February 29th, I had to come to AA because everything I tried to control my drinking had failed. And it was so obvious that nothing I was going to do was going to help me with my problem. And when I was a little girl, I grew up in an alcoholic family. I didn't know it. I don't even know if they know it, honestly. And I would get in trouble. I started drinking at 11. And you get caught a lot. Like, you can't really be a good social drinker at 11. It really kind of sticks out. And nobody would know at family parties. It was like when it was at school events that it kind of stuck out. And I would be getting in trouble and suspended and grounded. And my parents would always say, you know, we have alcoholism in our family. You can't drink. And I would say, oh, yeah, okay, all right, great. But I didn't know what alcoholism was. I knew that my grams was an alcoholic. She was the crazy lady of the neighborhood, and the house that she lived in, my family's house, was the one with no electricity and broken windows, and kids would run by it because some crazy lady was in there that would yell at you, and she couldn't get off the couch, and she died by the time she was 60. So I knew that was alcoholism. And I honestly thought that she had a choice, that she chose to drink. No one could ever explain to me what alcoholism is, and that if you want to stop drinking, you're not going to be able to. And that when you do drink, you probably have no ability to control the amount that you drink. And unfortunately, I didn't know that was alcoholism till I had it. And I think that's probably the case for most of us. You know, I could want to be mad at my parents for not educating me, but it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, the toothpaste was out of the tube for me at 11, and it was going to be this. I feel like the lights are right. Do I look heavenly up here? Are the lights shining on me in such a way? Congratulations on your new location, by the way. You know what the coolest thing about being the Benicia Clock Tower meeting and meeting here is? No one's going to know why you call it the Clock Tower. That comes now. You know, you have this cool history of the meeting that new people won't know until you do a meeting where you give your group history, and then everyone will go, oh, that's why it's called the Clock Tower. So that's fun. I like weird stuff. Ask my husband. So for me, the thing about alcoholism that really got me was the insane lifestyle. And because I had grown up around alcoholism, it was very familiar to me. People always got arrested in my family. You know, drunk driving was just the way things were done. You know, every party had alcohol at it. Every life event was marked by alcohol being associated with it, whether it be joyful or sad. Irish wakes, anyone? Baby showers? I mean, even alcoholic baby showers. I remember when I had my baby shower, all my aunts left and went to the bar downstairs because we didn't have any alcohol. So the insanity of alcohol can be very confusing because it feels normal. And when I got to AA and you get that beautiful book, they gave you the blue one in the very beginning. If you skip all the forewords and preface, the first thing you'll get to is the doctor's opinion. And in there, it talks about that. It talks about the alcoholic's life as the only one they know. So therefore, the insane things feel normal. And that's what was happening to me. things that would be insane started to be completely acceptable. For me, my alcoholism, you know, when you're 11, you know what it looks like, right? Stealing Rolling Rock ponies from the refrigerator and hanging out on the railroad tracks with maybe two or three other girls trying to figure out how do you open a bottle without a bottle opener. You smash it on the railroad tracks and just try not to cut yourself. Or like a jar full of little splashes of all the alcohol from the house you babysat at. One time I stole a bottle of vermouth and then learned later that there's not even alcohol in that. Didn't even matter. It was like the idea was good. So then my drinking, when I turned 21, it really kind of clicked up a notch. I had a job so I could afford to buy the amount of alcohol. Hi, Far. Good to see you. And not only that, but I could have access to it because I was 21. So my alcoholic insanity started to look like buying cars and totaling them. I remember I bought a Volkswagen Cabriolet, and 2 days later it was wrapped around the median on the highway. And I was almost like, this is so stupid. Thank God I didn't register that car. Like, just kind of wanted to move on. Like, well, that was dumb. And like having a cop pick me up off the side of the road and my face is smashed and I'm bleeding and like all I want to do is get all my Grateful Dead bootlegs out and have them drive me home so I can get back to drinking. And, you know, I didn't get any consequences around that, but, you know, trashing a whole car is a pretty big one. And I started to black out a lot. I'd lose those periods of time. And I would meet up with my girlfriends the next morning and we would, you know, go to the diner and have your beautiful hangover meal and exchange your madcap adventures about what happened to you last night. Well, where'd you go? Oh, who did you meet? Oh, I don't know his name, but ooh, you know, and you have to piece back the night about counting your money, like how much money do I have left? And or you wake up in places you don't know where you are and you have to pick up a piece of mail off the table or go out and look at the street corner. You can stuff that for a little bit and think it's fun, but it'll catch up with you. It won't feel good. And the thing that makes it feel better is drink, you know? So our drinking behavior causes insanity that we can't live with. It causes shame and guilt that we can't live with. I can't have those feelings. They're not tolerable. They're not acceptable. And since I started drinking at 11, I learned to change the way I feel by drinking. So you with me? We're in a loop. We're in a strange loop. And the insanity starts to get normal. So the totaled cars, getting arrested started to become normal. I'm a 2 DUI person. And all of them were in California. I'm from Philadelphia. Back in the 90s, you didn't get arrested. They just would bum cigarettes off you and let you go home. Or ask for your phone number and let you go home. Or take your weed and let you go home. But in California, they actually arrest you. And I spent a few nights in jail out here. I remember one lady who was processing me was like, oh, honey, you just need to drink more water. I was like, ooh, okay. Maybe that'll work. It didn't work. I got a second DUI. Thanks, crappy advice. So that started to be normal, you know, getting arrested. I started to get fired a lot, lost a lot of jobs. That started to be normal insanity. I got a job. I thought, oh, it must be the jobs I have. I was bartending. Do get a shift drink. Anyone else a bartender or get a shift drink? Remember the shift drink would be like Long Island iced tea with double shot. You know, like give me a pint glass of liquor is my shift drink. Or a beer with alcohol and a beer with a shot poured right in it. You know, like that's not normal, but it is to us. Insane behavior becoming normal. Then I would start drinking before work because I couldn't get up in the morning without my hands shaking or having panic and terror feeling on me, and then I would need the morning drink. And now things that I said I would never do are starting to become normal. I'm drinking with my kid in the car. I drank during my pregnancy. Like, sobriety for, you know, when you're pregnant is expected. I couldn't do it. Felt normal after a while, you know, after 9 months of not being able to stay sober, it seems normal. Then I started to, something changed at that point. I was trying to change behavior, people, places, and things externally to try to get a control over my drinking. And it looked like a major geographic. I did move from Philadelphia out to California, and nothing happened. You know what happened? I stopped doing drugs. I thought drugs were the problem. They were a problem. They really were, but they helped my alcoholism. They kept me on my feet longer. So when I came to California, I showed up an alcoholic, and that was actually really the best thing that ever happened to me. I had moved all the way across the country to try to get my life together, and when I came out here, I made a deal that I'm going to be sober. But sober doesn't include alcohol because it's legal. And in California, you can buy it in Safeway, which is really cool. I'm from Philadelphia. We have blue laws. You can't even buy liquor on Sunday in Philly. I think you still can't do that. You have to go to the bar and buy a six-pack and really plan your drinking out. So that was accessible. It's wine country. Like, I'm not going to miss out on that. So my idea of sobriety certainly wasn't sober. Like, that's gross. And when I showed up here, another bottom arrived in my life. Like I said, I had been a drug addict, so I knew what those bottoms looked like. And I even had a little fantasy that, well, if drugs were legal, I'd probably be cool, you know? It'd probably be okay if I wasn't constantly having to hide my behavior because this stupid society doesn't let us have the fun we desire. And when I came out here and all I was doing was drinking, I hit a spiritual bottom. Hadn't yet had one of these. I mean, things were rough back in Philly, and I mean, I barely had a place to live. My grandma was letting me stay at her house. I couldn't hold a job. I couldn't have a bank account. I had no phone. The utilities were often shut off. I had to shoplift food. Like, they were some bottoms, but none sufficient for me to ever think about all the way real sober. And when I got to California, my alcoholism was like, hello, I've been waiting for you. I've been waiting for your full attention, and it had it. When I got here is when I started to drink in the morning and when my hands would shake and all those little earmarks that I would say in my head, if this happens, then I'll stop. Like my little 11-year-old self told my parents that, oh, yeah, I won't drink. When it gets to be a problem, I'll stop. And here we are, it's a problem and I know it. And on top of those problems, I'm broken. You know, like I can't be in a room full of people. I cry all the time. I wanna yell at you all the time. I'm so angry all the time. I can't show up anywhere. I can't look people in the eye. I am going to work and I am holding a job, but I'm hiding in the bathroom drinking every chance I can get. I'm living in constant terror and fear that you're gonna find out like what's going on with me. Spoiler alert, everybody knew. Everybody knew. I didn't know they knew. I thought I was doing a wonderful job hiding my rock bottom chronic drinking. I was the last to know. But that spiritual bottom really shook me. It really shook me. And I just would be so full of like despair. And I thought I had mental illness. I thought I had depression or something, or I don't know. I remember driving home from work, and there was like a paratransit van next to me. And I could see in the window the passenger was like some poor soul with like cerebral palsy or something, like totally crippled and contractured in a wheelchair with the oxygen on. And I was like, I would do anything to trade places with you. Like the bondage of self that you get from alcoholism, you know? That understanding that like there is nothing free in my life and I'm a slave. And nothing will change until this problem of alcoholism is under control. So then I started 3 years of this great illusion of control. Well, how do we do that? Well, you try to limit the number of drinks, right? Ugh. Well, like I said about the doctor's opinion, there's some gems in the doctor's opinion. It talks about an allergy to alcohol, where if you have one drink, you kick off a craving, and then it's hopeless. You're never going to be able to cut off your drinking. You drink against your will. I have an abnormal reaction. I didn't know that. So I spent 3 years trying to control the amount I would drink. No more than three, no more than four, just wine, just at home. None of it worked. None of it worked. Then I would be like, well, maybe I need to work out because alcohol has a lot of calories and I'm packed on some pounds. I'm about 40 pounds heavier than I'm used to being. I'm going to go to the gym and work out. I would go to the gym and I would need to drink. I had a membership to, it wasn't City Sport. What's the other one? I can't remember. In Shape. And I would be so wasted in there. It was embarrassing. Like, I would lock myself out of my own locker all the time and have to get the desk guy to come open up my locker for me, and we'd open it up, and boom, there's my alcohol waiting. Like, that's why I had to get in, because I needed another drink, and they'd open it up, and there's my, like, there's my Sparks malt liquor drink that I'm using so that I have energy to work out, just sitting there. Like, this is me trying to control my drinking. I read books. I read, who was that lady? Susan Powers or something, like The Power of, I read that. I read everything. I was at the library all the time, just searching, searching, searching. You know what the funny thing is? I actually was in probation and sentenced to AA. And for my professional career, I had to go to AA. I knew about AA. Did not occur to me to go there. Mm-mm, no way. It's always the last house on the block. Anyway, after a few years of that, I did go to an AA meeting, and it was magic, you guys. It was magic. I know not everybody has that experience of, like, a very powerful first meeting, but I think we get what we need here. And I am so stubborn, and I just needed instant relief. I needed to know right away that this was going to work. And at my first meeting, it was a birthday night. I watch people get chips and celebrate sobriety, and just was amazed by that. Like, I had only known active alcoholism. I didn't know anyone to get sober. I didn't know that there was hope and a life in sobriety. Like, I would have gotten sober, and then I just thought, like, well, then you can never go out. You can't do anything. You're just locked in a room like Rapunzel, and no prince is coming to rescue. That's it. Game over. And I would have been okay with that. But at that meeting, like, it's like this meeting. Like, you're screaming, you're hooting, you're hollering, you're having a blast. You're living your life. You're out there. You're in the mix. You got your kids with you? Like, what the heck? At that time, my son was 8, and, like, it was bad and dark, and I just didn't know that there was something hopeful more that could happen. And I was so scared to go to AA. I was so afraid. Like, I just thought, like, being an alcoholic was the worst thing in the world. And to just witness that in one meeting, like, filled me up with so much hope. And I listened to everyone talk about how they knew they were an alcoholic and what they did to get sober. This: come to AA, get a sponsor, work steps, get a service commitment, read the literature, take suggestions, be honest, don't lie, you know, try your best and say sorry when you screw up. And it all sounded fine. I could do this. Like, there's no weird thing here that I probably won't be able to accomplish. I did read the steps on the wall, and some of them were like, wow, what is this? Having had a spiritual awakening, that sounds really trippy. I don't know about that one, but don't worry about it, right? And I left that meeting with a lot of pamphlets. Big shout out for the pamphlets, because that's really what hooked me, right? Like, I went home to my room and shut the door and read all the literature, and, like, I saw that this is a real option. It's a real option here, and I want to try it. And the next day, I woke up, and I didn't drink, which was a miracle, you know? And I watched all of us come up and get our chips tonight and celebrate that miracle. If you're an alcoholic and you belong in AA, the deal is that you drink no matter what. So, like, to even put together 24 hours of not drinking is a freaking miracle. And we're celebrating years up here. It's pretty wild, pretty cool. And I knew by the time I got to AA that nothing I could do could stop me from drinking. So it immediately happened for me like that. And what I knew is that I'm going to keep coming. So anyway, I did all the stuff. You know, I took the suggestions, not gracefully, not correctly, not timely, but I did. I got a sponsor within a couple weeks, and I got a home group, which is, if you don't know what a home group is, it's just a meeting that you go to every week. Just pick one, show up there every week, get a service commitment, put money in the basket, say hi to people, call them when they don't show up, practice being a human with them. And I got that, and got a sponsor, started working the steps in order. And I didn't have that obsession to drink. It didn't come back. And the most amazing amount of time was the 24 hours. And when I hit a year, I was like, how do we do this over and over? Like, doesn't this get boring? It doesn't. It doesn't get boring. Your life keeps changing and growing. And, you know, I wanted to bring it. Oh, I should have found it. My sponsor had me do that exercise where you write what you want out of sobriety, like name 5 things you want out of sobriety, and then seal it up and open it in a year. I did that, and it was like, easy. Everything was accomplished. My job came back. I, you know, was a good mother. I had returned to my family. I was showing up for relationships. I had a job. I had a car. You guys, I had like a driver's license with no warrants. I had car insurance. I was getting my teeth fixed. I had help, like miracles. For years, I hadn't had that stuff. But the biggest thing was like peace, you know, and a little self-esteem. And a little joy, a lot of joy, actually, a lot of joy. I'll talk about that. So, you know, you work the steps and you do the inventory and the amends, and the spiritual awakening came. You know what it meant? That things would happen to me in my life and I would have a different response or a different reaction. I was staying sober. I was finding evidence of a higher power everywhere I looked. I felt safe and protected. Even when things didn't feel okay. Did you know that's what serenity is? Like, I don't know what I thought serenity is, but the definition is that you're okay no matter what. Like, not that everything's going to be great, but that you're going to be okay. Like, oh, what a novel concept. Things cannot be okay, and I will be okay. That was cool. The unity. I want to talk about the unity. I had a sponsor early on who, Joan, you guys know Joan. You know Joan. She told me, like, you know, it's cool to go to meetings and put your hand out to newcomers, but you got to take them by the hand and bring them into your life and show them how we work the steps and show them how we live sober. And I really liked that, you know, especially because I was a single mom and my son would go back to spend summers and Christmas with his father on the East Coast. And, like, I'm crazy. I don't, you know, like, we're used to chaos. And I had a lot of time, so I found myself, like, picking up ladies at Sober Living and strapping car seats in my car and driving hordes of girls to meetings and, you know, going to dinner and going to movies and, you know, working out with each other and just, like, building a fellowship around me. And then I would start sponsoring girls, which, what a gift, you know? Like, who wants to talk to me about sobriety? Lots of people, it turns out. And my sponsor at the time was doing like a monthly meeting where everybody would come over to her house. So I started doing that. And it would be like a bunch of really awkward people that don't know each other. Like, I don't want to be here. I hate this, you know? And like, we still do it. And like, a lot of them are here to, like, you know what happens? Like, you get homies for life, right? Like, we just keep showing up in each other's lives, living our lives together. And then we have this connection, you know? And it rolls back to save your ass a lot. Like, my career I had lost, and then I was allowed to have it back. And for a while, I just kind of hid out in, like, office work, and I'm a nurse. And the office work was killing me. I was so stressed out. And during COVID, like, I just hit a level of burnout that was, like, no return. And I was working serenity prayer, like, help me accept. You know, help me accept. I was working that first line a lot, and I would do all this spiritual work, step 11, and acceptance, and go and be of maximum service and show up and come home so freaking exhausted, you know, until it got to the point where it was like, oh, there's another line of the serenity prayer. It's called change the things you can. And I started to put some effort into, well, what would that look like? And I started to do, like, terrifying things, apply for jobs in patient care, terrifying. And I remember we had our home, all my homies are here. Thank you, homies, for coming tonight, by the way. We have like during COVID, we started doing online meetings just to save our asses. And then we kept doing it because it's a really nice way to connect intimately with each other. We're so busy, we don't get to see each other. And we were at one of the friends' house, and I, like, off in the corner was like, girl, I applied for a job today back in patient care. I'm so scared. I don't even know why I'm telling you I'm not going to get it. She's like, that's so freaking dumb. Like, why wouldn't you share this scary stuff with us? That's what we're for. And I was like, oh my God, you're so right. And it just kind of, like, flipped a little switch, like a little switch of humility, you know, to, like, let people in. Why are we so closed off and don't want to be vulnerable? Because we're afraid, right? What have I learned over and over in AA? I'm okay. It's going to be okay. It is okay. And you know what? It wouldn't have mattered had I got that job or not. I had relief right then. But I did get the job. And then it got even scarier. And I'm so glad that, like, homies were with me through that. Not only the homies, but God. And I remember having, like, driving to work being like, I'm going to kill somebody. I'm going to kill somebody. I'm so rusty on my skills. Why did they hire me? I am going to kill someone. I'm like listening to podcasts and watching YouTube University and like spending all this time like trying to make sure that I can show up perfect, you know, for a job that I'm new at. I'm a learner. And I remember I was like, what did I do? I made the worst mistake of my life. And I'm trying to like bring God into the car with me while I'm white-knuckle driving to work. And I was like, let me put on a meditation. And I'm like, the meditation is like, just take some deep breaths. It's like, just, you know, just set your goal for the day. What do you want to get out of this day? And I'm saying, I want people to trust me. And the meditation voice is going, trust. I was like, oh, I should trust God, like, instead of demanding that everyone is giving me what I want, like, bring God in and trust that higher power has got your back. And it just, like, again, another miracle provided me instant relief in the moment, and I've not had that fear of return in work. And I'm still doing terrifying things, and I probably will, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't say I'll kill somebody. I'm not going to kill anybody. Nobody dies in home health. 911, go to the hospital. You know, the thing I learned about unity is, like, I have to stick with the group because that's where God is. When I'm on my own, I'm nuts. I'm nuts. I'm crazy. I push you out. I have weird ideas. I'm, like, controlling. I'm isolating. I'm hyped up. I'm anxious. But when I'm around you, God's in you, and then I get God from you. Like, I don't know how to go right to God, but I know how to go to you, and you give me what I need. And I, like, bring it to the next step of our triangle, recovery, unity, and service. Like, the service is where I make sure I'm showing up for you. And guess what happens when you do that? You get out of your head. Again, I get the goods, right? And a big shout out to all my general service people here tonight. I see you, homies. When I first started getting sober, I would pick my service commitment, what looked interesting to me, what I thought I could do a good job at. And that was great. That was great. And then I started getting pushed into areas of service that I didn't choose. I don't want that. I don't want to be secretary of my home group. I don't want to do that. And we just get pushed into it. And I would find every time that what an amazing experience it could be to just show up for what's laying in front of you. Just take the opportunity. Like, the universe is inviting you for a fun party. Don't say no. And I got to be the secretary of my home group during COVID. My home group is like a huge, it's Love and Service. Hey, shout out to Love and Service. It's Sunday night, Thursday night, big speaker meeting. They work well in person, you know, but online, you know, I got to think about, well, how do I make group unity? How do I make an environment for somebody new to come and get sober? Like, what's going to be here for them? And I think back to my first meeting and like how welcome it was and how the pamphlets that were chosen. And I think about some group had discussions and made all those decisions. And they created that little environment that saved my ass. And I got to do that for other people. Then I got to be on the Speaker Seeker Committee. Not my idea, was pushed into it. Actually, we formed a committee and someone was supposed to be chair and they were like, I'm not doing it, I'm out, you do it. So like, you know, again, okay, fun opportunity. And then I really learned about that, like choosing speakers and what kind of message is going to be here for the newcomer that walks in. What kind of, you know, what kind of person is going to be up here representing AA and what an important decision that is. Oh my gosh. And then we decided to go back into the room. Then you heard me say I'm a nurse, right? Then I'm on every ad hoc to figure out how to do a hybrid. I don't know anything about hybrid. I did it for home group. I did it for our district. I did it for area. Again, very careful choices about like what kind of environment's gonna be here for newcomers. So fun, all the time, so fun. And I've been doing general service for, gosh, I guess about 10 years now. And Billy Joe was talking about agenda topics, and how freaking cool is that? If you have a group that's talking about agenda topics, please go. Please use that time, because that's the only time we wanna hear what your opinion is. If you don't go to that, you can't say shit about what happens, all right? Sorry, you. This is your time. And again, think about that. Like, it's really about tradition three, right? Like, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Do we mean that, or are we full of it? You know, and a lot of our agenda topics are trying to figure out what AA is going to look like for the drunk and the wild. Who's out there, and how do we get them in here? When they get in the door, are they comfortable enough to stay? So, you know, in my time, I wasn't paying attention to agenda topics for a long time. That's okay. That's okay. You know, you take a while to get in here and figure out. But once you do know, it's your responsibility. And like in my time, I think about the preamble. Remember when we changed men and women to people? You know, okay, we did that. And then we did plain language big book. You know, for people, like the thing that hooked me on that was thinking about people in jail that don't have sponsors. Like, why do you read the big book with your sponsor? To translate, I don't know, to tell me what this old-timey language means, right? Make a book that somebody could read on their own. Great. And people would get upset, and I would think, well, it's not for you. And how nice that you have the privilege to be upset. You're already here. So there's my soapbox for that, though. But again, service, you know, when I had my commitment, I was the chair of Contra Costa County. I remember driving to that first area meeting. There's like 200 people there. They all know what they're doing, and I don't, and it's so scary. And it's so far away. It's in Petaluma. That's like an hour, and I'm in the car just terrified again. Me and myself in the car is like no good. And I'm like, oh, my God, what am I doing? What did I get myself into? And like a voice just came in my head, and the voice was, just get in the room. Just get in the room. And as soon as I parked and walked out and saw you guys, I felt a sense of ease. And that was what happened, you know? You just go get in the room with people in AA and you do your best job you can. Try to be useful. Be an honest, kind person. Just do your best. Just do your best. Know you're human. You're going to screw up. And then the magic happens. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you for letting me share tonight. Thanks for my 18 years.
Thank you.
Give you a hug. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.